Well, good morning. I just want to start off and share a little bit about a testimony of when I initially came into Josh Gen. I had to go through quite a radical realignment. I'd been a Presbyterian minister, and at the age of 26, I was called to a congregation. It was over 300 members, and along with taking the position of pastor of that congregation, I had a secretary, I had a pastoral assistant, I had an assistant minister, I had a guy that did all the caretaking for the property, and then we had a play school and we had four teachers that were there. So I had eight people that were there at my beck and call. I gave the orders and they followed out. And when I joined Josh Gen, there was this realignment that had to take place. I was just part of a team at Durbanville. And Russell was, he's one of the elders in Josh Gen. He was heading up the team. And one of the things that he asked me to do was to, we were meeting at the Stellenberg High School. One of the things that he asked me to do was to be the liaison person with the headmaster. Just to keep relationship. If anything's wrong, we sort it out. And we didn't want to have any bad vibes. So and the one night, we had a social at the school. And 200 odd folk poured into the place, and there was lots of food. But in their hall, there was a carpet. Now, I don't know. I don't know what people do. Instead of putting the food in their mouth, they drop the food, and then they proceed to walk and grind the food into the carpets. And I was the liaison with the headmaster, and I'm thinking, oh, help me, Jesus. Tomorrow, the headmaster's going to walk in and he's going to see all of this icing from the cupcakes ground into the carpet. And there, I said to Medler, we have to do something. So we started getting down on our haunches. You know, I mean, at one point, I was aware of this group of teenagers that were there and they kind of moved away and the look of contemptuousness. And like, really, what you doing? And there I was, scraping up the floor, scraping up the nonsense from the floor, and I thought, that's just being a servant. So I want to speak on servanthood today. The most dynamic definition that I've read on servanthood comes from Gail Edwin. And this is what it says. A servant's job is to do all that he can to make life better for others, to free them to be everything they can be. A servant's first interest is not in himself, but others. Servanthood is a loving choice we make to minister to others. So I want to speak about a guy in the Bible. He was Peter's brother. His name was Andrew. He was in the background. And let's go to John chapter 1, and we're going to read from verse 41 and 42. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother. Now, he had just met Jesus, was to go and find his brother Simon. That was his name back then. It was only later that it changed. And tell him, we have found the Messiah, that is the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus, and Jesus looked at him and said, you are Simon, the son of John. You will be called Cephas, which is when translated is Peter, the rock. So immediately Jesus sees him and changes his name. And it's interesting to see that this is his job, is to go and find others and to bring them to Jesus. The first one he does is he takes Peter, his older brother, to Jesus. So let me ask you the question. How many of you are ministers here this morning? Okay, only a few of you. Only about 4.5 of you put your hands up. Not you know, it wasn't a trick question. Some of you were like, that was the half. All of you are ministers. All of you, my job. Let me tell you what my job. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 11 and 12. It is He who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, some to be pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up. In that verse 12, that's why we've got this organization called the 412 Movement of over 500 churches that are relating to us at Josh Chen around the world to prepare God's people for works of service. You see, my job as a pastor, a teacher, is to prepare God's people for works. My job is to equip you for you to do the work. What a great job. What an awesome job, huh? To prepare you to do the work. And this is what Andrew was doing. He showed such a servant's heart here. And I think he sets a biblical model for us. He wasn't an upfront person. He didn't say, I'm there to preach the message. It was Peter on the day of Pentecost that preached the message. I'm not there to sing a solo. I'm just there to serve. And so we see Andrew, we're going to look at the kind of person that he was, the kind of man that he was, and reflecting what a disciple of Jesus Christ should be, and the kind of person that we should have as a member of the congregation. First thing that he did was that he valued people. He valued people. Meets Jesus. First thing he does, he goes and he fetches Peter. Come and meet the Messiah. And Jesus looks at him and says, Simon, no, Peter, that's your name. Not Simon the reed, but Peter the rock. In John chapter 12, we're going to read this passage now. Philip has a whole lot of Greeks that come to him and they said, we want to meet Jesus. And you know, Philip could have just taken them straight to Jesus. But no. What he does is he goes and finds Andrew. He says, Andrew, help me. And Philip and Andrew take the Greeks to Jesus. Also, just, and I'll mention this a little bit later, who was the guy that found the little boy with 5 loaves and 2 fishes and brought him to Jesus? That Jesus performed the miracle of feeding the 5,000. Huh? It was Andrew. What a servant heart. But let's look at what John chapter 12 says. Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the feast, and they came to Philip, who was in Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we would like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip in turn told Jesus. Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls into the ground and dies, and remains, it remains only as a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. What a servant heart. What is required, first of all, to value people? I think we value people when we walk in integrity. Who we are, what we are, is way more important than what we do. We need to be people of integrity. Solomon says in the book of Proverbs, a good name is more desirable than great riches. So just in your mind's eye right now, strip away all your qualifications, all your PhDs, all your degrees, all your credentials, all your reputation. Strip away those things. What do you see? Billy Graham said this, integrity is the glue that holds our way of life together. We must constantly strive to keep our integrity intact. When your wealth is lost, nothing is lost. When your health is lost, something is lost. When your integrity is lost, all is lost. So let me ask you some questions. How do I treat people from whom I gain nothing? Am I the same person in the spotlight as I am when I'm alone? Do I put other people ahead of my own personal agenda? Do I have an unchanging standard for moral decisions or circumstances that determine my choices, when I have something to say about people, do I talk to them or about them? You value people when you walk in integrity. You value people also when you love people. Love. Without love, you're nothing. Let's look at what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 1. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but I have not love, I am only a resounding gong and a clanging cymbal. That's just noise. It's just irritating. If I have not love, I'm just that. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all the mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but I have not love, I am nothing. And if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. You need to make people feel special. And you do that by loving them. People need to feel special, so encourage them. They want a better tomorrow. Show them hope. They desire direction. Navigate them. They feel low emotionally at times. Motivate them. They want success. Help them to win. And Andrew, a servant, is also somebody who learns. He's always got a servant attitude. One of the things that I said to Yaku earlier was that it's what you learn after you know it all that counts. When I got my degree, I thought, I got it. No, I didn't. You need to keep on learning. Keep on learning. Even when you're 80 years old, keep on learning. Ray Kroc, who started the McDonald's franchise, said this, as long as you're green, you're growing. As soon as you're ripe, you start to rot. You need to keep on growing. And we can always do with one more servant. We can always do with another Andrew. The interesting thing is that Jesus, he's moving towards the cross. He's moving towards the incredible, excruciating experience of dying on the cross. And the night before his crucifixion, he undresses and he washes the feet of the disciples. What a servant. When I realized that this past week, I thought, wow. I mean, so many of us would have been consumed about what we faced. We would have been full of apprehension, stress, and anxiety, but not Jesus. How can I minister to these people? I'm going to wash their feet. I'm going to show them what true servanthood is. Another aspect about the servant heart of Andrew was that it was an invisible service. It's just always in the background, behind the scenes. You see, Andrew understood that. Andrew understood. You know, I suppose when they were growing up, Peter was the one. Peter was the charismatic one. Peter was the one who was the life and soul of the party and the gathering. Andrew was just in the background. And Andrew knew that when he went to get Peter, Peter with his giftedness and his talent would come to Jesus and Jesus would see something of leadership upon him straight away in a dynamic way. And that's exactly what happened. But Andrew said, I'm going to get him. I know that I'll never be part of the inner circle of the disciples. I'll be one of the disciples, but I'll never be in the inner circle. I'll never be there at the heartbeat of Jesus. I'll understand, but I'm ready to serve, and I'll introduce Peter, my dynamic brother, to Jesus. And that's exactly what happened. And he was cool, and he was fine with that. And that's exactly what he did. Always in the background. There was a pastor in Pittsburgh, Bruce Tielemann, who was preaching. And at the end of the service, a guy came to him and said, it's all about basin theology. What is that? Basin theology. There were two parts in the Bible that a basin is mentioned. a basin was brought to Pilate. And Pilate, when he was standing in front of Jesus, washed his hands with water from a basin and said, I'm relieving myself of this situation. And he moved away. Another time a basin was mentioned in the Bible was when Jesus filled it with water and washed the feet of the disciples. We can walk away. The other aspect is, are we going to serve people? Are we going to serve the Lord and people as well? A lovely story of Hudson Taylor, who was the great missionary to China. He was an old man at this point, and he had a young guy come and visit him and walk with him through the villages. And as they walked through the villages, they became tired, and they went to a place where they were going to sleep for the night, and they got to the place. And the young man, who was probably used to being served and have somebody attend to his needs, took his shoes that were full of mud and dirt and put them outside his door of his room, expecting that somebody was going to come and clean those shoes. And the interesting thing is, when he got up in the morning, those shoes were shiny, were clean. And it was Hudson Taylor that got up a little earlier and cleaned those shoes. This great missionary from China was servant enough to do that. I'm sure they had a conversation about those shoes later. But that was just the servant heart that he had in cleaning that young man's shoes. A lady wrote a poem. This is what it was called, I Know, Lord. You know, Lord, how I serve you with great emotional fervor in the limelight. You know how easily I speak of you in the women's group. You know how I effervescent I become when I speak to the fellowship group. You know how I love to teach a Bible study. But Lord, how would I react, I wonder, if you pointed me to a basin of water and asked me to wash the calloused feet of a bent and wrinkled old lady? Day after day, month after month, in a room where nobody saw, in a room that nobody knew. There was an experience that Jesus had with the mother of James and John. They came to Jesus. She came to Jesus one day and said, Lord, when you get to heaven one day, please just on the right and on the left, put my two sons. They were called the sons of thunder. Just put my two sons there. And Jesus launched into the most incredible teaching, and this is what he spoke about in Matthew chapter 20, verse 25 to 28. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." That's our job. You see, in church leadership, it's like a pyramid. The closer you get to the top, the less freedom, the less options that you have. And that's the same. One of the things that you need to understand, if you're coming to look at what Josh Chen is all about, know and understand that this is not a country club with a cross on top. I know that it's a playhouse, there's no cross, but I mean, you understand what I'm talking about. This is not to come and to be a pew potato. You're going to come and you're going to get involved and you're going to find your ministry here in this place. It's taken me 39 years to get to the place where I got rid of pride and arrogance, to think that you as a congregation, you as members of team are not here to serve me and my needs, but me to get involved and to serve your needs. So that I can bring you to that place where you can fulfill your calling and God's calling in your life. This stuff that we do call church is about eternity. Rick Warren in his book, The Purpose-Driven Life, said, I want to sum up this life in a nutshell. It's a preparation for eternity. That's it. It's a preparation for eternity. And so when you are lackadaisical and lukewarm and half-hearted and apathetic about the Christian life, it's got eternal value. And God speaks so strongly towards that. Let's get involved and let's be a part of this thing called church. You see, there are no positions when it comes to servanthood. Norman Schwarzkopf, who was the general who led the American troops into Iraq in the early 2000s, he said that when he was a young man fighting in the Vietnam War, he was a colonel. He said, at one point, we ended up on a minefield. And when we were on that minefield with other soldiers, I was so aware that rank meant nothing. We were fighting in a minefield. And we had to help one another regardless of rank. There's no rank. We're all servants that are trying to serve God with all our hearts and all our minds. Gotta love people more than your position. So, just some encouragement. Perform small acts every single day towards your family, first of all, towards your husband, to your wife, to your children, to parents, to others. Learn to walk slowly through the crowd. One of the things that I have learned in the ministry is that you walk slowly. Don't always be in a rush. People want to stop and talk to you. So stop and talk to them. Minister to them. Remember stuff about that person. Walk slowly through the crowd and do stuff. Move into action. Albert Schweitzer said this, "I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I know. The ones among you who will be really happy are those who have sought and found out how to serve." And then the last one is, servanthood is about insignificant ministry. Insignificant. God likes insignificant. God likes insignificant. There is a verse in the book of Jeremiah which says, "Don't despise the day of small things." You know, I've often wondered. I mean, there was a man who was mowing the lawn. He wanted to mow his lawn very quickly after work and before the sun went down. And he was out there pushing the lawnmower and it was cutting the grass. And his son came out and said, "Dad, can I help you?" And so the son got the lawnmower and started to push it, and it was very slow, and he was struggling a lot, and he was pushing this lawnmower, and then slowly but surely the dad straddled him and got his hands on the lawnmower and started pushing the lawnmower as well. And that's like us, God. God, I want to help you in your kingdom. I mean, God doesn't need us. He is an all-powerful, awesome, omnipotent, omniscient, all-knowing, all-loving God. He doesn't need us, but he's prepared to partner with us. And that's the incredible thing. Insignificant. Insignificant. In Luke chapter 17 and chapter 19 and verse 17, "Well done, good and faithful servant," his master replied, "because you have been trustworthy in a very small matter, take charge of 10 cities." It's only when we are faithful in the small things that we begin to experience the authority of God on our lives. God has planned a great destiny and a great purpose for you. But it springs out of daily faithfulness in his kingdom. Daily, mundane, ordinary little things that take place in our lives every single day. You will blow it in the big things if you blow it in the small things. God likes insignificance. Don't belittle those small things that you're doing. Don't belittle leading a community of 10 people. Don't look down on that. Don't belittle the time that you have two children under the age of 3 and you're thinking, "Well, I'm not up there. I'm not up front doing stuff for God." But you see, maybe your destiny is molding that little girl or that little boy's life. Because maybe one day God has got a destiny for that little child that will way, way surpass anything that you ever imagined for your children. Moses was put into a little basket and pushed down the river. Here, this little juicy Hebrew kid and the crocodiles floating around. And Jochebed, Moses' mother, pushes this baby down the river. There's something on that child. See, one day, when we get to heaven, I think some of those champions for God, they will stand in front of God and God says, step aside. Step aside. We don't know. We don't know what Jochebed did, but she prayed into that child's life. She ministered to that child that the University of Egypt didn't get to him. Being a rich kid in Pharaoh's home didn't get to him. And he became a great deliverer of the people of Israel. And some of those champions will stand there and God will say, move aside. I want to meet Moses' mother before I meet you. That was her destiny. That was her destiny. And the interesting thing is, talk about insignificant. So Pharaoh's daughter is bathing in the river with her oil of Olay. And here comes this little baby. She hears a cry. And she picks it up and says, I wonder if daddy will allow me to take this in. And Pharaoh looks and says, what harm can a little baby do? What harm can this baby do to me? Let me tell you, that baby had enough power, God's power in it, to produce deliverance and to bring incredible deliverance and freedom to the people of Israel. What can this insignificant little baby do? God likes insignificant. You think, my job, my work, my service is just insignificant. Nah. God likes that. David just had a sling. The sword, the armor, wasn't satisfactory to him. Just a sling and a little stone sorted that giant out. Rahab, in Joshua chapter 2, brought salvation to her family. Why? With one little red ribbon. What's significant about that? Here comes an old donkey. I'm dying. He dies in the desert. The hyenas come and eat his meat. The vultures come and pick the bones. And then the ants come and they eat whatever is left over. And then God says, are you all finished with this donkey? And Samson comes along. Sees the jawbone of the donkey. Picks it up. And annihilates a whole bunch of Philistines from a jawbone. A small, insignificant little thing is lots in God's kingdom. Lots. Whatever service you offer, He notices it. Especially when you give a cup of water to somebody who needs it. When you wash people's feet. When you're of service, He notices that. We celebrated communion this morning. Wow. Because of what Jesus has done for us. So let me ask you, are you going to be one of those that come into church, participate in communion, and go out without folding up your sleeves and getting involved in the ministry of the church, getting involved with service? You know, it's not only, I think, a place of immaturity, but it's a place of lack of gratitude when we do that. It's like a child at Christmas time with a whole lot of presents that have been carefully wrapped by mom and dad under the Christmas tree, and you just ignore them. Christmas comes and goes, and you just ignore them. God has given to us so incredible much, much stuff. I want to say to you, what is your ministry? What area of servanthood do you want to come and participate in the life and the work of this church? This is not a country club. Like I said last week, it costs nothing to become a Christian. Jesus has done it all. He's given us salvation. But it costs everything to serve Him throughout your Christian life. Unless a grain of wheat that falls into the ground dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it produces much. What's your ministry?